to live is to face changes. We all know that. People often said the only thing that never changes is change itself. And it's true. That's what chapter 3 leads us in. But chapter 3 is also a challenge to whoever wants to face this issue of life. The life keeps changing. That's why in verse 9 it asks, you know, what gain we have in this life if everything changes. One thing seems to be canceling out the other. What is new quickly becomes old. We know that even more keenly, I think, today than ever. People got a new phone. I don't want to say what phone. There are many of them. And pretty soon, the new one comes out, and then the friends are waving the new one. And you feel yours is old one, even though it may be 1 or 2 years old. And keep changing. The rapid changes sometimes really push people to think, what's life all about? Is there anything I can hang on to it? Actually, changes not just bring about, you know, the adjustment and all kinds of things. Actually, also a good thing that is often will make people think, what thing that I can hang on? Should I follow the quick changes, keep changing, and then come to a point? Time is gone. Time's over. We know there's a word in the first part of this text using a time for this, a time for this. My first point today, talking about the key teachings of this passage. There are three of them. The first one is, there is a time for everything. As we read from verse 1, it says, there's a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. And what's the list for? It's so many things listed. Actually, it's not to be exhausted. You actually can feel in other stuff too. I think the preacher, we call him the preacher, behind the preacher, traditionally we know is Solomon, even though the book itself, in terms of the kind of Hebrew we have in the book, some authors or scholars feel that it probably re-edited because of there are some Hebrew hints there, but overall, for those scholars still, they cannot really deny that there is Solomon behind a preacher. Even though the book used the word preacher, the book never introduced himself, the author, explicitly as Solomon, but rather as a preacher. And the material basically is Solomon, at least the tradition handed down to us. But what's the preacher's point here when he said there is a time for everything? When people read through this list, you wonder what's going on. You look like life is like a back and forth. There are 14 pairs of them. If you count them, 14 pairs, and 7 pairs, and then 7 pairs of the text here, answer the question, if things, one thing happened, another thing happened, and seems like sometimes one cancels out the other. But I don't think that's the only point the preacher wants us to think about. He's not only want us to think about life change from one to the other, actually pushing us to face the question, how much control we have as humans. Now remember, he's listing a lot of things here, especially addressing to people who want to live their life under the sun. In other words, he often in the book, the book is hard to read because often he sounds like he's almost like a non-believer, such things. But actually what he's doing, often he put himself in the shoes of somebody who only lived their life for what is visible under the sun. There are 29 times the book used the phrase under the sun, and several times used the word under heaven. Basically is to point out what you will get if your life is really lived for whatever under the sun, what is you can see. And to push those who read the book to sometimes even despair, wondering what life is before the good news comes. You know, people don't really appreciate good news unless they know what's bad news. And that is pretty much Ecclesiastes is trying to do here. At this moment, I'd like us to see how much control we have in life, because for many, they live their life thinking I'm in control, especially when technology gives us a lot more. We can predict a lot more things nowadays. We can plan about the future a lot more, and we have a lot more control in medicine of certain kind of cancer or whatever. Before, it may not be much. So we humans has become more and more, I'm talking especially for those who live for only under the sun, that we need to see as Christians how they think, and this book really reflects it. Often all those advances we can call give us a false sense of control of life, and even Christians sometimes fall into that trap too. And one of the Christian organization, they had a survey. They said 90% of Christians are now, I don't know how true that is, 90% of Christians practice atheism starting Monday and then come back, become a God-fearer on Sunday, kind of. You know, it's when you go back to work after Sunday and or live as a student or live as a father or live as a mother, you face everything on your own. Kind of, I depend on my own. If I don't have control, I cannot live, kind of a mentality, even though we may believe God. But let's do an exercise here. I don't need you to say it out, but it would be good that you test yourself. See how much control we have from this list, and to see what the preacher wants to drive us to from reading this list. A time to be born and time to die. You know how much control we have. Very little. I don't think I chose to be born in the family with the last name Luke. And I don't think I'll choose the day of my death. You can say, well, you can commit suicide. Well, for some people, they commit suicide, but somehow something happened. They couldn't even. And they take a lot of drugs and turn out somebody just nearby, just put them in the hospital and then save them. They get so angry. You didn't let me die. Now, some did, and did die. I know that. But anyway, as you read on, some of them really have a lot more control. A time to plan, a time to uproot for the ancients. Definitely, they had some control in planting, when to plant something, and when to pull up. You know, when I want to pull up, I'll pull it up. How can you say I have no control? You know, yeah, maybe, yeah. But when we plant, if you run into a tornado, will you plant? Not really. the weather still to some extent affect weekend and on. So it's not really completely in control. And then the time to kill, time to heal, of course, talking about wartime, which is made even more explicit as the list ends. And often these terrible things happen. We saw in Syria, in many parts of the world today, people just cry out, please have somebody control this. Humans are not in that control often. And to heal, a time to tear down, a time to build. Now, tearing down a thing, we have some control. If we want to tear down something, we probably want to tear it down. But not really. If you think further, if you don't like the house across the street, go there and tear it down. We don't do that. It's not always we want to do something. But sometimes we don't want to tear down. Recently, I heard in the news, there's a house owned by one of the very famous person, $several million, had to tear it down. While looking on the news, I said, very kind of a sad, you know, have to do that. Yeah, because termites. Termites ate all over, apparently. So it's not to you not to tear it down. But we can go on and on. We will find time to weep and time to laugh. Yeah, it seems like we have control. Yes, God has given us freedom to control a lot of these things to a certain extent. A time to mourn, a time to dance. When I want to cry, I cry. That I am in control. But often, we wish we don't cry. You know, a loved one passed away. So it's not that simple. I know commentators often feel difficult is verse 5. A time to scatter stones and time to gather them. What does it mean? Really, I think you talk about war and peace. If you count the 2-7 pairs of the list, a time to scatter stones and time to gather them really falls at the number 7, parallel with the number 7 pair at the end of the second part of the list. Because in ancient time, often in war, when one army ran over the other one, they often tear down stuff and then get all the stones thrown in the farm, in the field people plant stuff. Just destroy the survival. And then the time, of course, peace will gather back down, even though it's not clear. Possibly, let's do with that as well. And then, verse 6, a time to search, a time to give up, a time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to tear, and time to mend, and time to be silent, and time to speak. I know those Mary know very well this secret. A time to be silent, a time to speak. I'm sure those who think of marriage have to learn quickly. At that time, husband probably should keep quiet, especially when it comes to the wife just finished cooking something and you taste it. And then yell out with some word that is not so appreciative, not appreciating the effort of the wife. There could be a time to be silent, and yet there are time to speak. Sometimes we don't speak enough to say, I love you or I thank you. We're not always in control because we fail, even in that simple here. A time to love, a time to hate. And I've seen divorces really made people who fell in love so much. And then later, you see them hate each other so much. It's a sad picture, and yet it's a reality that even Christians are living in. But that is not the first teaching of this passage. The passage is forcing us to recognize, to accept the fact there's a constant change and then there's constant challenge in our lives that we need to learn how to manage our lives, how to control, and yet we cannot do as we want. Because God, only God is the one in control of all things, and only He can turn even bad things into something that may ultimately work together for good. And that is the second key point I want to talk about. That's the next slide, those verses that follows. And the verse I like to look at us to look at is, He has made everything in its time. There's a song you probably know, some of you, that based on this one, and so years ago they already sing that. I saw some of you nod your head, and as in His time, right? And my wife and I, actually, when we had our first son, she's still pregnant, and we sang the song, In His Time. In His time, in His time, He makes all things beautiful. In His time, right? Only God can make things beautiful in time. The book begins, if you look back to Ecclesiastes, you talk about sunrise, sunset, and the beautiful rhythm of life. Of course, we're free. But the statement really follows the list that look gloomy, as we saw earlier. The point is, the preacher wanted to step further from just looking at nature to acknowledge not only nature, God has created in such a way that everything can be beautiful, even though sin has afflicted the earth and sin has really inflicted in the humankind, and we are all living in a sinful life, and things are not moving the right way and not in the will of God. And yet God can make everything beautiful in His time. Think for a moment. For Paul, who really in his life persecuted Christians, and from how he was to how he became, it's wonderful. Just looking at the life of Paul, that's why he could say, "One, all things work together for good." He did not say, "Many things can work together for good." He said, "All things." That means including those things in the past that we wish we did not live with those. But God can turn everything around because it's gone. And the most obvious, in terms of detail, of a story of life, the one is Joseph. In his life, you can see that there are moments that really God made the evil, even evil deeds of the brothers, into something that ultimately all things work together for good. You probably remember Joseph, who really the favorite son of Jacob. Because of that, the brothers hated him. Now, hate is one thing, but hated him to the point of killing, that's sometimes unthinkable, but they wanted anyway. Remember the story. At first they wanted to kill him, and later one of the brothers said, well, don't. Just let's sell him. Let's put him in the pit, actually, at first. Put him in the pit so he can be hydrated and just die there. Now, the ancients could tell us, actually, in that kind of pit, you could find snakes and scorpions. Sometimes not just, you know, thirst to death in that part of the world. And yet, it happened, there was a caravan, you know, people who were trading passed by, remember the Israelites, they passed by. But we read the story carefully, it's at the point that he was going to die. The Bible tells us, actually, Joseph, that time backing the brother, don't kill me. And he backing, and that's when the brothers later confessed, and out of their mouth we found out Joseph actually backing a lot. I'm sure I can imagine that he would say, brothers, why do you kill me? Why? You know, why you have to leave me to die here? Yet there was a caravan came by at the very crucial point. It was an accident? No. It's God making the evil. At that point, actually, the caravan passed by was a time to save him. And sometimes we wonder, if not because a caravan passed by, what would happen? But his life was not easy. Remember how he ran into this whole situation, the wife of the Egyptian who bought him as slave. And one day, she just wanted him to listen to her, to lie with her. And Joseph refused. And then, you remember the story? Ended up later, she just told the husband, because Joseph left the coat. You know, she said, this is the evidence and that kind of thing. And the husband put Joseph in jail. In the jail, he got a chance to interpret the dreams for two king high officials from the king. And therefore, he was appreciated by these two. But when they went back, he told one of them, the one whose dream, he told him, the king will restore your office, the cupbearer, as you remember the story. He said, when you got back your freedom, please remember me. But he forgot. For 2 years, think for a moment, Joseph in the jail waiting for 2 years and no word. Probably heard of cupbearer already elevated back to his position. He could be very disappointed. And you wonder, why didn't God let him out, you know, when the cupbearer got back his job and he went to see the king. He said, you know what? There's a Joseph. He interpreted my dream. You need to free him. How nice. But he had to wait for 2 years. You know what? Joseph's time and God's time is not the same. Because 2 years later is the time when Pharaoh had his dreams. And because Joseph was gifted by God to interpret the dreams, and that was the right time he had a chance to be elevated, because when he interpreted the dreams of Pharaoh, he could not only free but elevated, and through him many people were saved, including his family, during the famine. Think for a moment, if he was released after the cupbearer, you know, got his freedom and told the king, and the king said, you know what, this Joseph, why don't you, he's the one really helped me, why don't you let him go, you know? And now this is my imagination, but it's quite possible. Now Joseph got out of the jail, he could be selling hot dogs somewhere on the street. He could be something else. We don't know. It's not the right time, but God made everything beautiful in his time. One thing marked Joseph different than the others because he does trust God. Talk about his fear God. And even at the end, what did he say to the brothers when the brothers afraid that he would revenge on him? He told them, "You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, so that I have a chance to preserve many lives, helping Egypt to have store of food so that many people in the round surrounding preserve." Remember, God said to Abraham, "I'll bless you, and also through you and your descendants, many nations will be blessed." And here is one of the descendants of Abraham that through him, God blessed the others. In God's will as chief, and even more so in Jesus Christ's life we know. Often you'll find in the Gospel that Jesus said the hour has come, the time has come. For example, in chapter 13, before he washed the disciples' feet, what did he say? He said, the Bible said, Jesus, at that time was Passover, when Jesus knew that his time, his hour has come to depart from this world. Having loved his own disciples in the world, he loved them to the end. And we know the following story. He washed the disciples' feet. And then before he heading on the road to the cross, he prayed this way in chapter 17, John, "Father, the time has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may glorify you." The time is God's time. Humans, of course, we don't have control, in the absolute control, but Jesus has. And he shows us he has come, has gone, and time is in his hand. The third point I want us to think about in the finish is the text continued at the end. It says, "So that man will revere God." And that's the purpose. Because when we know that only our time is controlled ultimately in the hand of God as Christians, then we are willing, truly willing, to live and fear God. Fear God in the sense one. I know sometimes when we talk about fear God, it's hard. This word, often people want to translate it to the revere. But fear God here, that we know in the Bible, often is parallel to other words, love God and serve Him and walk in His way. For example, Deuteronomy chapter 10 talk about fearing God is parallel to walk in His way and love God and serve God. Because the word is used for a world that's full of fears. You and I as Christians, whether you like it or not, often we do things out of fear something. And we fear to take risk, or we fear to walk by faith because there's something we fear. We're not in control. But God said, fear rightly, that is, fear me. Because when we want to live a wise living, I can tell you from my experience, I'm sure from yours, one thing that will mess up our thinking is fear. There's all kinds of fear comes in. And we start wondering, can I leave that to God or not? And that is really something God said, "You can, because I'm still in control." Just as He has His plan for Joseph and for many others that gone before us, He has planned for us. We know the Bible tells us that all things work together for good. And God did not spare His own Son, gave Him up, as the Bible said, how much He also will care for us. And Jesus said a very important word, the next lines, I have told you these things so that in me, you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. There's a contrast, maybe in some sense, in me and in this world. And the contrast, or maybe some sort of echo, between have peace, have trouble. When we look at this verse, one thing we wonder, how can you have peace and have trouble? Well, that's what Jesus tells us. In this world, we will have trouble, and yet in Him, we can have peace. It looks like they don't come together, but they do. So what's the lesson for us? Quickly here. First, I think the Bible teaches us that time is a gift from God. So use it for God's purpose. And especially during weekdays, we need to think about this. Whether it's good time or bad time, God is in control. Often we need to be patient. And sometimes we need to ask God for wisdom. Sometimes living for God could be as simple as to clean up our room. Because there's a time to mess up, but there's a time to clean up. There's a time to play and a time to study. There's a time to text, and there's also a time to stop texting. A time to turn on the machine, but there's a time to turn it off. But in all these changes, let God help us to revere Him, to live for Him, to serve Him, and to follow His word, especially as He stated to Ecclesiastes 3 today. Let's pray. Our Lord, we commit ourselves one more time to You. We know there is a time for everything, but often we don't know, and often we are not in control. And yet You know. You are making everything beautiful in its time. It's not everything is beautiful, but rather You can make everything beautiful in its time. Help us to serve You and follow Your word as we live for You. In Jesus' name, Amen.